let the record reflect that it is Tuesday, January 17, 2012, and we're in the House Finance Room. Thank you, House Finance members. In Juneau, Alaska, I would like to introduce our Betsy Doran. Just wave to everybody there. She is our moderator. Also in attendance are Pam Varney, Executive Director of LAA, Sanjay Lish, Recorder, Don Johnson, the Building Manager. We have Doug Gardner from Legal Services and Kathy Tilton, Administrative Assistant. On the agenda, we'll go ahead now with the roll call. Just a moment, please. Senator Betty Davis.
Here.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Here.
Senator Donnie Olson.
Here.
Senator Lyman Hoffman.
Here.
Senator Bert Stedman. Senator Gary Stevens.
Here.
Senator Linda Menard. Senator Joe Thomas.
Here.
Thank you. Representatives, Representative Alan Osterman.
Here.
Representative Mike Chenault.
Here.
Representative Bob Heron.
Here.
Representative Lindsay Holmes.
Here.
Representative Craig Johnson.
Here.
Representative Bill Stoltz.
Present.
Representative Peggy Wilson. Okay. Okay, next we have the approval of the agenda. Are there any corrections or additions to our agenda?
Madam Chair, I move that Village Council approve the agenda with the addition of the Ferencamp Classic. Also, we will delete number 6, Cutting Edge, and then this is to approve as amended.
Are there any objections to that? Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved as amended. Minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes, please? That was the November 4th, 2011 regular minutes.
Madam Chair, I move that Village Council approve the November 4th, 2011 minutes as presented.
Okay. Are there any discussions on them? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved as presented.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Madam Chairman,
Representative is there, Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is there going to be anywhere on the agenda to talk about new business, maybe?
We don't have that down, but I certainly can defer to you if you have something you want to add towards the end.
I can toward the end. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, all righty. And now we have the sanctioning of charitable events. And in your packet, the one charitable is Thanksgiving in March, a very popular event. This is the 12th annual event for the Thanksgiving in March, which is scheduled to be held Tuesday, March 13th at 6 p.m. at the Imperial. Most everyone is familiar with this event, but there are those who are not. Thanksgiving in March is a fundraiser in which legislators serve turkey, a turkey dinner, and baked pies for a pie auction. The proceeds that are raised go to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. May I have a motion to approve the sanction of Thanksgiving in March fundraising?
Madam Chair, I move that Legislative Council sanction the following charitable event per AS 2460-080, parenthetical A2B.
Is there any discussion? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing none, that motion passes. Okay, next we have Cham Jam. This is the 27th anniversary of an event known as the Cham Jam, with this year's theme being the Big Lebowski. The date is set for March 17, with funds being raised for the benefit for a nonprofit organization known as REACH, which provides studio pottery and gallery facilities for adults with disabilities in the Juneau Arts Committee community. May I have a motion to approve this sanction for this year's event?
Madam Chair, I move that Ledge Council sanction the following charitable event per AS 2460-080, parenthetical A2B, Sham Jam.
Are there any discussions? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing none, that motion is approved. The next charitable event will be the Theron Camp Kelly Classic Charity Putting Tournament. This is the 23rd annual event that honors former legislators Betty Theron Camp and Tim Kelly and raises funds for the Armed Forces YMCA and the Bartlett Regional Hospital Foundation. This year's event will be held March 1st through 3rd, 2012. May I have a motion to approve the sanction of the 2012 Theron Camp Kelly Classic Charity Putting Tournament? That's a mouthful.
Madam Chair, I move that Ledge Council sanction the following charitable event per AS 2460-080, parenthetical A2B, Theron Camp Kelly Classic.
Is there any discussion? Are there any objections to that motion? Hearing none, that motion is approved. And then next we have a late travel and per diem claim issue approval here from Representative Cisna. In your package, you'll find a request for approval for a travel and per diem that was filed past the deadline for Representative Cisna. May I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that Ledge Council approve the late travel and per diem claim for Representative Sharon Sisson.
Is there any discussion? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing none, that motion is approved. Okay, and then we're going to skip over the snow plowing, and we'll take that probably up in a timely fashion for the next meeting. Next on the agenda then will be item 7, which is the ITB 558 doors, woodwork, trim, and baseboard approval, legislative finance remodel. And this is being brought to you because the last meeting we put on notice how much we wanted to be very cautious over for the new building. So the invitation to bid 558 was issued to solicit for the outright purchase of doors, woodwork, trim, baseboard for the Legislative Finance Building. The lowest bid price is $34,532.10 from Valley Lumber and Building Supply. Here to answer your questions are Building Manager Don Johnson and Executive Director Pam Varney. Would you like to come up? Do members have questions of this and concerns?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I've had ongoing concerns dating back a couple of years, this project. This is just the latest litany of that, so let's just air it out because it's – and I'm not going to do a I told you so on this one from a couple of years ago because that would be counterproductive, but –
Would you like to put that in a form of questions
Madam Chair, you just asked if there were concerns, and my concerns have been ongoing for multiple years on a bad judgment deal that transpired. And
that was before my time, but I appreciate the history on it. Okay, Mr. Johnson, do you want to just give us a quick – I'm interested in it, so would you go ahead and say the reason that we are at this $34,000 and why that wasn't originally in the...
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Don Johnson. I'm the Building Manager for Legislative Affairs Agency. This act is the general contractor for the agency on a lot of the projects, and so we don't have an end cost for bidding on things as we would if we went out to bid with the general contractor. We would have a known cost at the end. So the ITB before you today was not included in previous estimates because we didn't have any costs. In September meeting, we didn't have all estimates or costs or bids together. Since then, we've had a lot of other things gone out to bid. The door hardware, the spray foam insulation, the cabinetry and counters, suspended ceilings, etc.
Any question from members?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don, so in your memorandum to the committee, to the council, excuse me, is we're at 548 on the project total, and this bid is 34.5. So are you asking that the cap be set to $582,000?
Chair Herron. No, that's not correct. I'm asking for the cap to be removed so that I can finish this project. Current projections show that, including this $34,000, we could spend another $116,433.
And excuse me, Madam Chair, an additional $116,000?
That's correct.
So, at the end of the day, per square footage, how much are we going to have? I'm understanding it'll be less than the Tom Stewart, but at $2.50 a square foot, or do you have that figured out? Or maybe this would be a good time for Pam Varney to come forward.
I'm sure. I didn't come up here with that figure per square foot. My apologies. I didn't think of that, but it certainly wouldn't be hard to figure out. At the current expenses of $548,228 plus the $116,433, for a total of $664,661, we divide that by, I believe, the approximate square footage for the building is about 2,200 square feet, 2,600. That would give us a dollar per square foot figure.
Okay. But that isn't really a true figure because we still need the furnishings in, and I'm sure we're not moving all the existing furniture over. So, Executive Director Pam Varney, do you want to weigh in on this, please?
Doing the furnishings, there are existing funds, a house inside finance, and legislative finance for them to get new chairs. Don, doesn't charge when he does built-ins. We probably are trying to do built-in desks. We try to do that throughout the Capitol building to try and fully utilize as much space as we can instead of using a desk. So that's not included in that.
And, of course, I think we all understand the rub comes when this is a very small lot. We're already over $500,000, but yet the location is great, and I think when it's all done and said, it will be a nice addition to the Capitol and when the people get moved over there. But it's very painful to go through this, as we've all experienced whenever we've tried to renovate any of our own personal homes, et cetera. So I think that's the concern, and that's why at the last meeting we tried to put a cap on that. Anything over that had to come back to the council so we could fully vet it and understand what was coming down for additional expense. May I have a motion then? Is there any other questions from anybody? I'm sorry. Okay. Representative or Senator Thomas.
Thank you. And thank you for the explanation. I see that as of at the September 29th Legislative Council meeting informed that the figure would probably be between 550 and 600, and that's the reason for coming back to get authorizations. And you're at 548, and is that 548 including this amount we're talking about today? No. So then you're at roughly, what would that be? I'm not sure of the exact bid here because there's two numbers on the page, and I'm unsure as what it actually is.
582.
What is the number?
582.
582 would be the ending number, we're saying?
No, it's not. 694.
Not the ending number, for this, including this bid that we're talking about today. Okay, so you're at $600,000 then at this point in time. So How much do you anticipate it would cost to finish the final items that you say are not included in the recap at this point in time?
Chair, Senator Thomas, what I did is I included today's ITB for the 34,532. I figured for flooring installation, this could be an estimated 25,500. For GWB, which is gypsum wallboard finishing, installation, finishing, painting, that would be another 25. Exterior painting, estimated to be another 25. And some other unknowns, we still have a mechanical contractor to perform their work, the electrical contractor to perform their work, and there's the potential for unknown change orders there as well.
But
I have to point out that in 2009, I did estimate this to be anywhere between $350,000 and $700,000, and Jensen Durable Architects, they estimated the project to be at $441,000, and they're in the business of estimating. We've well exceeded that.
So I guess the last of my question is with the electrical and the mechanical, do you not have a bid from them?
Through the Chair, Senator Thomas, we do have a bid that has already been approved by Reg Council.
Right.
They have not yet performed any work on site. We're not done with training yet. But as work progresses, there may be some unknowns that come up. We tried to cover everything we could. It's not new construction. It's renovating. And as we all know, that there are things that we can't design for.
Correct. But I guess my question is you just ran down several numbers there. What is the number that you have for the electrical and the mechanical if that's not included already in your $548,000 to date.
Could you pull the mic a little closer to you, please?
Senator Thomas, in the 548 is the mechanical contract for $111,660 and the electrical contract for $146,460. But what might happen is they might say, well, the plans show this, but actually what you need to do is this, and that's going to cost you $300 to do that. If that's the case on a change order, and it's $300, and you have this cap, and anything else that's not included in this, we have to come back to council for $300.
We would love a change order for $300, believe me.
Well, right. And we have had change orders for $300. We don't know what that change order will be until, and what happens with the change orders is if it gets approved.
I'm relatively familiar with construction, so I'm familiar with that. I just wanted to know if, in fact, the mechanical bid and the electrical bid were already in. If there are change orders, then.
Change orders are not, because we don't.
So you're at $700,000, you're at least about at that point in time. Yeah. Okay, that's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Representative Wilson had a question.
Representative Wilson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question because I understand that there's going to be new furniture in the building. I guess my question is, they can't take their old furniture over because somebody else is, we're going to use it for something else here.
Madam Chairman, Representative Wilson, they have existing furniture. They can certainly bring all their existing furniture. What I relayed to David Teal after a cap was put on, that if they requested any new furniture, that we would not be taking care of that in this remodeling project, that they'd have to ask the co-chairs of finance to make those approvals. So I have no idea what their desires are on furniture. I'm sure they'll be bringing file cabinets and chairs and things with them, but if they want any new furniture, we're not going to include that in this cap.
Can I follow up on that?
Yes, please. I guess what I was saying is, do we have plans for the space that they're vacating?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes. Pat Davidson, when this all came about, their office space in the state office building. They're in very tiny cubicles, and she really wanted some additional space. And so budget and audit will be expanding because they are located right next to where legislative finance is on the sixth floor of the state office building. So budget and audit is looking forward to legislative finance moving out so that they can expand into that space.
And one last
thought.
I was just, that's what my concern was. It wasn't a concern. I just wanted to know there was a reason that maybe they wouldn't take in their furniture so that they would have to have different furniture. That's what I was. Okay.
They'll use the existing furniture that Budget and Audit has. They'll just be able to spread out and rearrange things so that it works better for them.
Okay. I think we have a question now from our vice chair.
I'll yield to anyone else.
Okay. Madam Chairman, I hate to drag a lot of different things into it. I certainly don't want Don or Pam to think that we're pointing any of the issues right at you personally, because it's not, mine's not toward either one of them personally. Right now, total, best I can figure is we have we will have at the time of completion about over $900,000 tied up in this building. I think if you take into consideration the cost of the building, which I think was $250,000, does that sound normal? I think so. We're going to have $914,000 tied up, and it's going to end up costing in the ballpark, if those numbers stay the same, $352 a foot. I don't know what the normal building costs are here in Juneau, but I know that I think in my class. You've been working on it, Madam Chairman. You can probably tell us what you can buy Class A space for in Anchorage. I know it's higher down here. My concern is that we keep adding to it. I haven't went over and measured the building. I've only been in it, I think, once, and that was just probably on a fluke. But is that 2,600 square feet of usable space? Or does that count the steeple? You know, so I mean, is it 2,600 square feet of usable space, or I know the building's probably just 2,600, but it looks smaller than that to me.
I do believe that is usable space. During the construction and the design, we did also reclaim some of the below grade area. And expanded the basement.
Okay, and Madam Chairman, this doesn't, if I could, it doesn't really pertain to the ITB, but I've seen in this piece of paper that we spent $9,000 for sprinklers to sprinkle the outside of the building between the building and the next building over.
Capital Inn.
And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why we would spend that money. I don't care if the bed and breakfast ask, if theirs is sprinkled, maybe you do it. But if they're concerned about ours burning down, I'd be concerned about theirs burning down probably more, since this is basically what we're building is a brand new building over there. And so, I mean, just to spend that money, you know, and here we are talking about furniture. What's the difference between $914,000 and $925,000 for new furniture? Why would you ever put junky furniture in a brand new building that you just spent $1 million on? It makes no sense to me. So, I mean, what we need to decide is how much this is actually going to cost us and get the thing built.
And you haven't deducted the money when we sell those stained glass on eBay or Craigslist.
Well, yeah, but I got another thing right here that can go like this. And that's the cash register. Just keeps on ringing. Thanks, Madam Chairman.
Now we call that the cha-ching.
Oh. I'd do it again for you.
One final question would be from our Vice Chair, Bob Heron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don, I guess this would be a follow-up to my earlier question. So just the numbers we're talking about today, 548 is current project, setting aside the cost of the structure. So 548 is where we're at. We've spent so far $34,000 for this newest bid, and then your estimate of $116,000 more to complete the project, so approximately $700,000 for a 2,600 square foot building, approximately $270 a foot, not disregarding the purchase price. So in your memo, are you asking us to put the cap at $700,000?
To the chair, no. I firmly believe that we could meet or exceed that very easily. If just the cost that I have right here, we're that close to $700,000. You know, if we put a cap on it, $700,000, it's entirely possible we'd be back here again.
Representative?
I'm good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I would say that the directive was to come back. We wanted to put it at $550,000, and that's what we're doing. And unfortunately, we're going to probably have to revisit this till that building gets done. We can't mothball it. It's an important piece of property right now. We've got a lot invested in it. We have to see it through. There's a lot of things that we go through in life, and we wish we could just end it, but we have the responsibility to see it through. And it sickens me that we've spent this much, actually, because I lived next door there last year, and I just walked by that corner, and it's just so small. But the location is great, and, you know, that saying, location, location, location. So I think it's I would like to move on, but I see Representative Osterman has a question.
Just for information's sake, when was this purchased and the project started?
2009 or 10, I think. Madam Chair, Representative Osterman, I can get you that exact date, but I don't have that off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
May I have a motion to award ITB 558 to the Valley Lumber and Building Supply?
Madam Chair, just for clarification, and maybe the Speaker can help me, but I think Ledge Council took action in 2009 for the purchase of the old church.
Well noted.
Clarification.
Representative Johnson, and then I'm going to move on if everybody's
had a
chance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we approve this motion for the windows, are we also removing the cap in this motion?
No, we are not removing the cap.
This is only for the windows. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Madam Chair, for clarification.
Yes.
Don, right now we have $448,000 tied up in the project, right? That's correct. Okay, yeah, $548,000. And you're proposing the $34,000, and it gets back to Representative Herron's question on the total amount. You're proposing $34,000 in this amendment for the windows, and then you will also be asking for another $82,000 to finish the project. Because I think your total was $116,000, so $116,000 less
34
is 82.
No.
116
after the
34. Well, then it won't come up to 664.
That's 698. It comes up to 698.
Just asking for clarification.
Okay, my numbers show okay. 548, then they're asking for the 34, which is 582, and then you're asking for the other 116,000, which will be 698, with no guarantees when you have the change orders and...
Through the chair, Representative Gell, I'm going to be off on a little of my figures, and I didn't
just.
I may have that incorrectly.
Yeah, just a number.
I'm figuring somewhere around $750,000.
Okay. Well, I thought you gave a number of 664, and the only way I could get to 664 was to take your 116 added to the 548.
To add 6,400 for some windows that have already been paid.
Just looking at just pure numbers.
That's expensive door starter and trim for 20.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anyway, Pam, I have a question for you. Are these the doors? Because remember, we came back because in the Stewart building, it didn't have the emergency where they had the brakes on the door, and that was additional. Is this building going to have those so we don't have to come back to get that security for fire? You know how when the doors have that automatic? Is that including door closures? Because you're going to come back for it. I know you will, because we get a break on our insurance if we have it, and it goes on.
Madam Chair, it's not required, so I don't believe that was in as part of the design.
Why is it not required? Because it's small square footage, or?
I can't answer that, but I'll be happy to get back to you on that.
Because that was a point of contention for me to pay extra when we didn't put it like we should have in the Stewart building to begin with. Do you want to just talk to that a minute, Pam, since I've kind of opened up a gate?
The Tom Stewart building, it wasn't part of the design. Those door holder closers are not required because they had automatic door closers on them to begin with. The issue was that occupants were blocking the doors open, which is against code. And the reason we put those door holder closers on there so they could keep the doors open. They're connected to the fire alarm system, so when there's an alarm, they're automatically closed. The legislative finance building will have smoke detectors and a fire alarm system in it. I don't believe that it is hooked up to any door holder closers. Again, I can clarify that and get back.
Yeah, could you get back to not right, but I want to know, I don't want that to become a down the tube late, and then I get in a bad mood and I try to have a good attitude. Okay, is there any further discussion? Will you go ahead and make that motion?
No.
I'm so sorry. I did not want to neglect Senator Egan.
No, Madam Chair, I just wanted to, I won't get involved in the issue, but I just wanted to remind us, our committee, that we did approve the sprinklers, and it was at the request of the Capitol Inn because their building is sprinkled, and they were concerned that with all the remodel on our new legislative finance building that it wasn't sprinkled, and so we agreed to sprinkle the outer walls next to the Capitol Inn because they are sprinkled.
Madam Chairman, just yes, a clarification of that.
They wanted a lot more done with this.
They wanted the whole building sprinkled.
And we chipped and chipped and chipped away for it until we got it to something reasonable that would be safety for their neighbor as well as for us. So
we have a dry sprinkler system.
That's correct.
Outside. And so we're sprinkling it, concerned about what burned down the Capitol Inn, but we're not sprinkling it so we don't care if we burn our own building up. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm okay with it. I just thought of that.
Is there anyone else that wants to?
Well, it was the matter of $30,000 versus $9,400.
Yeah, it was. We chipped away at it pretty good to be reasonable. Okay, may I have a motion to award this ITB again, 558, to Valley Lumber and Building Supply? Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move that Ledge Council approve ITB 558 to Valley Lumber and Building Supply in the amount of $34,532.10 for the Legislative Finance Building Project.
Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections to the motion?
Object.
Hearing none, this motion. Oh. Object.
Object.
Object. Okay, then I will need to do a roll call. Davis?
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan?
Yes.
Senator Donnie Olson?
No.
Senator Lyman Hoffman?
Yes.
Bert's not here. Senator Gary Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Linda Menard? Yes. Senator Joe Thomas?
Yes.
Representative Alan Osterman?
No.
Representative Mike Chenault?
No.
Representative Bob Heron?
No.
Representative Lindsay Holmes?
Yes.
Representative Craig Johnson?
No.
Representative Bill Stoltz?
No.
Representative Peggy Wilson? Representative Peggy Wilson?
Yes.
We have 8 yeses and 6 noes, so it passes. The motion passes. Moving on to the 2012 revisor bill introduction approval, and we have people. Thank you very much, Pam and Don.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Mr.
We didn't remove question of we didn't remove the $550,000, but we.
That's correct.
But we've approved above that, so.
Yes.
Is it then, is we automatically avoid the $550,000 because we've gone above it as approval?
No, that still stands, but we've gone above it, and it's been, it's like, consider it like an amendment. Now, if they want, they come back for something else if we're going to go over it again. But that, I believe, with that not being removed, it still holds everybody's feet to the fire that, you know, we're very concerned and engaged in this. So.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think a motion's in order is that I move that the cap is 548 plus the 34,000, and that will be the new cap.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Just a moment, please. I think Senator Stevens had some.
No, I'll decline.
Decline. Okay. Go ahead.
I would agree with the chair's interpretation. I don't think another vote is in order. But anything above that has to come back before this committee for expenditure.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I certainly would not disagree with your interpretation, but I do think it's important for the record that we state that anything above the 550 plus the 34 that we just approved would have to come back. And so I do want to be very clear that that is the message.
And the record will reflect that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, the record's going to reflect that.
Madam Chair,
I'd
actually like to have a vote on it, given the history of this project and the spiral from where it started. We know we've attempted to put a belt on it. I wouldn't mind throwing a pair of suspenders on there, too, just out of, you know. I don't think it hurt to clarify this, given the contentiousness of this project over, and it started out not under your watch, as I note, and I just want to clarify, I don't have any assertions against Mr. Johnson's management. He deals the cards he's dealt on this stuff, and it's just so you know, it wouldn't matter to me if we didn't finish the building. We used to have an art piece called Nimbus, and that was kind of that became a metaphor for a public arts program, and maybe an unfinished gutted building we paid $1 million for might be a metaphor for us making better legislative decisions.
Well, I would like to meet the committee maybe halfway, and I will put this, we'll agenda it for our next meeting, which will probably be like in 3 weeks. And
there is a motion on the floor, right? So point of order, there is a motion on the floor.
Did you make that in a motion?
I think Bob made that a motion.
And I seconded it.
And you seconded it.
And I would like to call the question.
Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, can I get a clarification? So it's the 548 plus the 34,000 we're approving tonight?
Yeah.
Moving the cap.
Okay, so now this is a motion to remove the cap. To move the cap to add this 34 on top of, and give me the exact amount is going to be 582. Okay, are we ready for the vote on this? Senator Betty Davis?
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan? Senator Donnie Olson?
Yes.
Senator Lyman Hoffman?
I guess so.
and Senator Bruce Stevens. Senator Gary Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Linda Menard? Yes. Senator Joe Thomas?
Yes.
Representative Alan Osterman?
No.
Representative Alan Osterman, I didn't hear that, okay. Representative Mike Chenault.
Yes.
Representative Bob Heron.
Yes.
Representative Lindsay Holmes.
Yes.
Representative Craig Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Bill Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Peggy Wilson.
Yes.
Let the record reflect that one was in objection, which is Representative Alan Osterman, and the motion passes.
You have a question.
Yes.
Does this mean there will be further opportunities for Representative Stoltz to remind us that he's not going to remind us of his right? Is that, or will there be other opportunities for him to remind us of that?
Absolutely.
It's such an infrequent.
Ready for a new session, I can
tell. Absolutely, Mr. President. Anything we can do for you?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Heron.
I'd like to dovetail with Representative Stoltz's answer to the Senate President. Yes, this is our version of arm twisting.
I have a brand new staff in the back.
Are they still there?
Yes. You might go back to Rainy Grass Lodge after this. Okay, next on the agenda, moving on, like adults, 2012 Revisor Bills Introduction Approval. In your packets for introduction is approval is the 2012 Revisor's Bill and a special Revisor's Bill that relates to notices being posted at the United States Postal Service. Catherine Kurtz and Pam Finley, Revisors, are here to provide information and answer any questions you may have. You ladies can start to come forward, please. Can you walk us through, can I have a motion that we move this?
Madam Chair, I move that Legislative Council approve the 2012 Revisors Bills and have the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council introduce it.
Okay. Are there any objections? Okay. Would you go ahead?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Pam Finley. I'm the Revisor of Statutes. These Revisors Bills are prepared pursuant to AS 0105036. They are also mentioned in the Constitution as an exception to the single subject rule. The purpose of them is to cure deficiencies in the statutes, get rid of conflicts, obsolete provisions, perhaps even in some cases suggest improvements. That sort of is pretty much limited in the past to giving chapters short titles and things to make life easier for all of us. We find these errors from our own review of the titles. We review 6 or 7 a year, from suggestions from the Department of Law, from members of the public, from drafting bills. We just run into them. Not every error that we find makes its way into the Revisor's Bill, because we only want things in the regular Revisor's Bill that are policy neutral, where we're clear about where the problem arose. There's no question about it being political or making any policy choices. Occasionally, we find errors that need to be fixed, but where the ways of fixing them, there are several possible ways of fixing them. And in that case, we usually do a special Revisor's Bill. In this today, we have two. I'm doing the special one, so I'll just briefly walk you through it. It has to do with relating to posting of notices at U.S. post offices. We have 4 statutes that require this. One concerns controlled livestock districts. One concerns personal property lien sales. One concerns consignee and bailee lien sales. And one concerns tax lien sales. All of these require notices of the sales to be posted at a post office. Unfortunately, since 2007, the U.S. government does not want anything posted at a post office that is not a governmental notice. So having these things in the statute actually causes problems for people trying to do their lien sales because they can't comply with the statute. So what I have done in this bill is simply just to get rid of that requirement that it be posted at a post office. They're still required to be posted in public places of different kinds. In just getting rid of it, I followed last year's bill, which did the same for execution sales. Just got rid of it. However, it is possible someone might say, well, why don't you post it at the library or something? So I think it's best if this go through the normal committee process, and if people want to suggest other ways of improving it, that's fine. So I ask for Ledge Council's imprimatur for this bill, and Catherine Kurtz will explain the regular revisers.
Okay, before could we ask if anyone has any questions, please, of Pam Finley? No? Okay, then go ahead. Catherine?
Okay. The regular revisers, Mike first, for the record, I'm Catherine Kurtz, the assistant revisor of statutes. We don't have with us today Jared Luckup. He's the other assistant revisor. We both work with Pam. And one thing that I was able to attend a meeting of revisors through NCSL this summer. I wanted to express my gratitude for that. One thing it reminded me of is how much more work we do up front than some of the other states are able to do in finding errors, potential conflicts, and problems before things are ever enacted. So that said, we don't catch everything. And the revisor's bill is our mechanism for fixing some of these problems. We can fix misspellings editorially. We can fix a few other things under 010503. Those powers are very limited. We try and be very respectful and restrained. So what I'm bringing to you in the revisor's bill are changes that we would recommend that do a little bit more. I can summarize them very quickly if you'd like.
I think that would be beneficial.
Okay. Half of the changes refer to definitions that have been or will soon be repealed that are referred to elsewhere. What we're doing there is taking the text of the original definition and placing it into a different location in the statute so that the definition will continue to exist and there will be something meaningful to refer to. The first two sections of the bill, sections 1 and 2, delete references to dates that are long past. These things should already be happening, so we're simply pulling out the dates. Section 3 removes a reference to federal territorial law. The federal government has been omitting this from its statute books for years, so that's one where I'm a little puzzled that it's still in there. If someone knows why it's in there and if it's important to continue to be there, please let me know because we can always delete a section from this bill, but it appears to me that it's obsolete. One is making conforming. Section 4 makes a conforming change to the Municipal Harbor Facilities Grant Fund. We're taking the word municipal out because we changed the sections relating to grants in a bill last year, and these are conforming changes that we probably should have caught and did not, so catching them now. The next sections, 5 and 6, relate to the definition of renewable energy resources. That's a definition that was going to be repealed in 2013. Sections 7 through 12 relate to a definition of school district that has already been repealed. So we're taking the text of the repealed definition, putting it in, and then referring to the new definition. Section 13 updates the section notice of changes to regulations. This is notice being provided to the legislature. The original statute had language which allowed for an alternate mechanism of notice where a department did not have the technological capability to provide electronic notice. The Department of Law has notified me that they believe all departments now have this capability, so the language is surplus. And then finally, Section 14 repeals a renewal provision for a type of license that's no longer issued, and that all those licenses should now have expired. So that's all we're doing. It's a relatively short revisor's bill. As I said, I hope you've had the opportunity to read and review it. These are just our recommendations. And if there are disagreements or concerns about any of them, we'd be happy to address them, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
And are there any objections then to the motion that we have? Thank you very much for your presentation. Hearing none, then this motion is approved. Thank you. Next, we have legislative procurement amendments approval. And this is a request to amend the legislative branch procurement policy to update it, either because it changes in state law or because its need for clarification for practical application by the procurement officer. There are two amendments requested at this time. The first proposed amendment would bring the policy into line with the state procurement code and would provide for a veteran's preference and a disabled person's preference and competitive sealed bidding. The second amendment concerns human trafficking. Doug Gardner from Legal is here to answer questions regarding these proposed amendments. And we'll hear that, and then we'll have a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Gardner, Director of Legal Services. As I noted in the memo that's in the packet to all of you, from time to time through procurement, we've had some procurement this spring, summer, and into the fall. Things come up in the context of procurement, or we see things that are missing. We have a number of different proposed amendments that we've been holding. Most of those have been technical amendments that would aid the procurement officer in administering contracts. Two of those have risen to the level of me asking council to at least consider addressing them now. As Senator Menard said, the first is an inconsistency with Alaska law. AS 3630 was amended in 2006 to require a human trafficking provision go into the legislative procurement policies. Ironically, the statute was passed, but the policies were never changed. The agency has been dealing with that issue by putting into contract a requirement that a person certify that they have complied with the human trafficking provision because the policies are out of step with Alaska law. This body, the legislature passed the law and made the change. I wanted to call it to the legislature's, to the council's attention so that that issue could be remedied. Actually, I'm dealing with them in reverse order. The other proposed amendment is public record at this point. All opened bids are public record, but in the context of a recent ITB, a veteran's preference, we weren't able to honor a veteran's preference. The legislative procurement policies don't acknowledge a veteran's preference. AS 36, so if a person was bidding on a project with the executive branch, they would have been eligible for a veteran's preference. They're not in the legislative procurement process. I wanted to call that to council's attention. I wasn't certain whether that had been the intention in the procurement policies when they were adopted. I couldn't find that it was. And because that materially affects bidders, I don't believe the agency has any ITBs out on the street right now. But when they do, if that isn't changed, a veteran's preference would not be something the agency could take into account reviewing bids. A veteran's preference, just so council understands, would be up to a 5% preference, up to a total of $5,000 on a bid. So I suppose it would, it might break a tie on a very close bid. But if that's the preference called for in 3630, and that's what you would be including in the policies. Also in 3630, our preferences relating to persons with disabilities and other bidders that include employment programs in the course of their business. So those would be the things that would be included in what you can see as proposed amendment number one.
Representative Stokes,
just a general question, and to the chair as well. Procurement has a pretty controversial history in Alaska politics. And matter of fact, we one of the few state employees that receives legislative confirmation insulated as the state procurement officer. You know, I could look at every time we've passed a squeaky clean or model procurement bill, we've probably amended it 20, 30 times since that's been, whether it was Senator Fink's major bill in 1990 and numerous others after that. We have a procurement bill that the House passed last year. It's sitting in somewhere, and, you know, if there's things that need to be done, they should be done whether in another bill or maybe an amendment to that bill. But I think it should be through we should deal with procurement issues through the legislative process. I just think maybe this is, if it's the way that's been done, I'd like to depart from the way it's been done in the past, because procurement issues ought to be the domain of very clear statutes, and they're instruments of policy and values and judgments, and that's sort of what a legislative body does collectively. And I don't want to substitute this much smaller body without the due process that our committee process would have on any procurement issue, just given the history of procurement in Alaska.
So what I'm understanding is you would like to delay this in...
Madam Chair, I'm just questioning why it's before us in this matter. If there's such an immediate justification for it, I just think I think procurement issues ought to be the domain of the political process as it's known through the legislative through committees and open hearings, and it's just a very complicated, often controversial thing. I don't want to, and if we've done it in the past, my bad for not noticing it before, but let's just stop it here.
Can I respond to Representative Stoltz?
Absolutely.
Representative Stoltz, the AS 3630.020 requires legislative council to adopt and publish procedures that govern the procurement of supplies and services, professional services, and construction to the legislative branch. So the legislative council adopted procurement policies. Many of those track AS 3630 as they're required to do in AS 3630. So it is up to this body to make those determinations. It's not these proposed changes are not to AS 3630. They're to Ledge Council's procurement policies. So they couldn't resolve through the process of a bill considering AS 3630. That's my understanding.
Thank you for your counsel on that. And Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's probably my bad, but I thought that the state had a procurement code and all agencies followed it. Apparently we don't. If I could ask Doug that question first.
Through the chair.
Would you repeat that? I'm just sorry. I apologize.
Does the legislative body have a different procurement code than the rest of the state follows?
It does. The legislative branch, it doesn't fall under AS 3630. The Ledge Council has its own procurement policies. Again, they primarily track AS 3630. It was because of the disparate treatment between a bidder under better and bidder under 3630 and the Ledge Council policy that I called this to your attention.
And Madam Chairman, if I can, I can certainly understand, I would like to give that preference to veterans and disabled people, but just that, I guess, one of those quirks that I would have thought that the legislature fell underneath the same rules as the rest of the state does, but apparently we don't.
Not on procurement.
And maybe we should, Madam Chairman.
And I have a building.
Yeah.
Are there any other ones that Senator Thomas?
This question may not be germane, but with the bidder's preference, is this in addition to any other bidder's preference that they may get as being a contractor, an in-state resident contractor, or is that?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, currently under the legislative procurement policy, a person would receive an Alaska bidder preference of 5% if they met if they had Alaska business license and most of, without going into it in detail, the basics. And so under 3630, you could be an Alaska bidder preference. You could get Alaska bidder preference, and if you were a veteran, you could get the other
additional
piece that I described. But under the procurement policy, under Ledge Council's procurement policies, that wouldn't be the case. You would be limited to the Alaska products preference and the Alaska bidder preference. Those are the only two preferences that I'm aware of right now in recognize counsel's proposal.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Can you tell us what, I mean, it's going to be another advantage for them, but is there a percent on that, or where does that fall?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the at least with respect to the veterans' preference, it would be 5% of the bid to a maximum of $5,000 if legislative council decided to make the veterans' preference in AS 3630 this basically the same as the make the preference in budget council's policy the same as 3630. So right now AS 3630 for a bid on a project with the executive branch would give a veteran bidder 5% preference up to $5,000.
Plus the
follow-up?
Yes. Plus the Alaska.
Correct.
And so they would have two advantages?
They would. They would potentially have an Alaska product preference. They would potentially have a Alaska bidder preference, and they could have a veteran's preference if they were in the unique situation of having satisfied all those.
Okay.
And
so essentially, you're saying that we already do it with in other areas of the state, but we just don't do it at, with Ledge Council. And so you're just trying to match that up with Ledge Council with what we already do.
Through the chair, I'm not advocating for anything. I just wanted to call it to council's attention after the past experience, the spring and summer with bidding, it became clear that Ledge Council's policy is considerably different than 3630, and I just wanted to bring it to this body's attention for consideration. That's all.
One more. Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This may not be a question for you, but if we had this policy in place now, we're talking bids for spring and summer, so I'm assuming we're talking about a building across the street.
That's fair.
Would that be?
How much more would it have cost us if this were in place?
I don't believe it would have changed anything.
Wouldn't have given an extra 5% to some voter down the road that may have, we could have elevated the cost by 5% or anything?
I don't think it would have changed. I don't think it would have changed the cost on the building now. It might have made a difference in a particular bid. I'm just not certain about that. I'm not the procurement officer.
But if it made a change, it would change the price of the building.
I think it's a, interestingly, the mechanics of how it works, Ms. Strong might be the right person to answer that question. I think it decides the bid. I don't think it adds money to the price of the bid. I don't think it results in the agency paying more for a project. I think it just decides the bid. But I'm not the expert on the actual application of it, so I would say that somebody else ought to probably answer that question.
And I appreciate that. But if someone bids 50 and someone bids 55 and there's a preference that the 55 gets the bid because it's discounted, we pay them.
That's correct.
I went to public school and all. It just makes sense that
come on, Gary. You didn't say you graduated.
I didn't say graduated.
I think we're ready for a motion. Mr. Vice Chair, please. Make a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that Ledge Council approve two amendments updating our legislative procurement procedures concerning Alaska veterans' preference and restrictions on procurement relating to human trafficking.
And disabled persons, did you add that? I'm sorry if you did.
Disabled persons.
Any further discussion? Are there any objections to the motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just not to be, not to delay this, but no, but I just want to make sure I'm voting on an amendment on dealing with human trafficking. I generally want to know what I'm voting on. I'm against it as a rule, but unilaterally. But no, is there anything? It's one of those. Somebody asked me tomorrow, hey, what's that human trafficking amendment you voted on at Ledge Council on this flawed statute that was connected? I'm not trying to be trite. I'm dead serious. It's been mentioned three or four times, and that's the kind of thing our good friends of the press bring up. The legislature is under vote on a human trafficking measure.
Would you recap that one more time, please? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, AS 3630-020, when it was amended in 2006, added this provision. the procedures, that being Ledge Council's procurement policy, must contain provisions for prohibiting procurement from a person that has headquarters in a country listed in Tier 3, the most recent trafficking in persons report published by the United States Secretary of State under citation to the U.S. Code. The procedures may contain provisions for restricting procurement from a person that conducts business in but does not have headquarters in a country listed in Tier 3 of the most recent trafficking in persons report published by the United States Secretary of State under 22 U.S.C. 7107. So apparently the Secretary of State publishes a report, and if you're in it, you can't bid. But our, as I said, our procurement policies never picked that up. It's been in that requirement. Has been in our ITBs. That's how we've been dealing with making our ITBs legal. But we ask that, at least on this one, that this conform with Alaska federal law.
It's on the record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Stoltz. So are there any objections to this motion? Hearing none, the motion is approved. You might sit right there, Doug, because you're coming up next, the legal representation approval. In this, I respectfully requested concurrence with my approval that was given to Doug Gardner Legal Service for the representation of Senator Joe Thomas and a member of his staff, Joe Hardenbrook, Representative Kawasaki. And in, it was in the redistricting cases that were filed in the Superior Court in Fairbanks. As time was of the essence with deposition scheduled for December 13th, 2011, approval was granted. Doug is here and can give a brief synopsis. May I have a motion of concurring with my approval motion?
Madam Chair, I move that Ledge Council authorize the Division of Legal and Research Services representation of Senator Joe Thomas, Representative Scott Kawasaki, and staff to Senator Joe Thomas, Joe Hardenbrook, in connection with litigation involving the reapportionment board.
Is there any discussion?
I'll object to the record.
Are there objections to the motion? Okay. Let the record reflect that both Representative Stoltz and Representative Johnson
are. And mainly for a question before we
okay.
Were these people subpoenaed?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, in my capacity as director, I became aware that there were witness lists out there. There were two witness lists. There was a plaintiff's witness list and an defendant's witness list. In reviewing those witness lists, I saw that there were members of the legislature on those witness lists. I did not bring them with me. Once I became aware that there were members that were listed, I felt that it was appropriate to send a letter out to members on the witness list, making sure that they were aware that to the extent that any legislative immunity issues were there, and that was the only narrow area that we were concerned about, that they'd be aware that our office could brief individual legislators about immunity issues. It's not always the case that every member knows a lot about immunity, and I wanted to make sure we were very careful and that deliberations of the body or other legislative acts were explored in the context of questioning and deposition. So we sent a letter to all of the members that were on witness lists. Again, I don't recall who those were. And I would say that some people called to talk to us about what legislative immunity was, the scope of it, concerns and issues. And I certainly can't reveal those names. That's attorney-client. But some did ask that we be available during the deposition. Jerry Luckup, who is our expert on immunity, sat in during the depositions of Representative Kawasaki, Senator Thomas, and his aide, Joe Hardenbrook. And so they asked for our assistance. And I don't believe it was a very active issue. I mean, that's all public record in the context of the deposition. But in terms of us needing to object, we did spend some time, I will say, talking with opposing counsel about the scope of immunity to make sure that they understood where the edges were, that we were going to object if it got into immunity issues. And I think opposing counsel both respected the immunity concerns. And frankly, I don't think we wanted to tangle with us on that issue. And so I think things went smoothly. But that's how it came up, and that's why I did what I did. I felt that it was important to make sure people understood what issues might affect them as legislators and indirectly other legislators they may have talked to or worked with.
Respectfully remove your
objection. I do remove my objection.
And then Representative Stoltz, did you have the other objection?
Madam Chair, I was unclear. Representative Johnson asked a question of subpoena. I think he was trying to gather how they became involved in the case, and if they were voluntary witnesses that were proactive, that would make a difference as opposed to whether or not they were deposed by the other parties. I think that makes a lot of difference in how I would feel it would be appropriate for this body. If they were dragged in there kicking and screaming, or if they were there as advocate witnesses, that would certainly color whether I felt this was appropriate or not.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, honestly, right now, it was long enough ago, I don't recall whether it was kicking and screaming. I do recall being aware that they were listed by third parties, and I don't know whether they went to those third parties and selected to be on the witness list. I just assumed that if a third party is listing somebody as a witness, it's not by the choice of the person necessarily being listed. But this is a good question. I don't fully know the answer to.
Madam Chair, I don't believe there are any political parties involved here, but it would certainly be in the norm the Republican Party or the Democratic Party would select witnesses that would bolster their case from giving their local knowledge and so forth. And in that case, we don't have that political dynamic. I don't believe there's any political parties, major parties involved in it, but there are certainly advocates. Some folks say there may be stalking horses for the party. I don't know. I'm not as familiar. I haven't followed the case. I just, in a political process like reapportionment, I think it's real shaky ground to embark upon. But, you know, it's one of those deals where I can ask whether or not these guys are good for the drinks, but if they've already drank them, you know, it's like the ship has sailed or whatever. I'm not casting any aspersions, but I just think it just as a general policy matter, I think it's bad policy to get involved at this level in the reapportionment process, the redistricting process. I may just maintain an objection just to say I didn't let you. You made the decision as the chair, and I'll respect that, but I just want to just note that I have policy concerns through a gentle objection.
So you're standing behind your objection?
Yes.
I need to just sum it up. Okay, and then go ahead, Representative Wilson.
I would just like to respond to that. If a member who was listed on the witness list contacted me or Mr. Luckup, who ended up handling a lot of the immunity issues, and said something about whether or not they were willing or not willing, I don't think I could reveal that to you. The fact that they were on a witness list asked to attend by a third party was frankly my main consideration, and I wasn't, as you know, being non-political, I wasn't concerned at all about motivations. I was more concerned about protecting the body and other members who might indirectly be discussed in those discussions because someone wasn't necessarily aware of the scope of immunity, especially when it comes to immunity related to work of aides or discussions between aides and members. And so I wanted to be proactive and educational, and to the extent people were on witness lists and asked for our help. I felt with the looming depositions that I needed to act, and so I did contact Senator Menard. That was my motivation for doing what I did. But even if I was aware of how willing somebody was or not, I don't think I could reveal that for attorney client.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was on the witness list. I sure wasn't going to. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But I was on the witness list, and when I got the letter, I didn't even know I was on the witness list. And when I got the letter from him, I called him, and I was very appreciative of the information he gave me, and I felt better that in case I did get subpoenaed to come and testify, that I would have somebody there to kind of watch for my interest. And I really appreciated that. And he took quite a bit of time talking to me on the telephone. I would imagine it was 20 minutes maybe. that we talked, because I'm really, that's one area that I don't know a lot about, and that's the law, because I've never been to a court, you know, and have had anything like that happen to me. So I was really glad that he sent the letter, and I think it was just his, I really felt that it was his concern to protect me, and I appreciated that. And so I just wanted to make that comment.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, thanks for the kind words. I believe that Representative Wilson probably spent more time talking with Mr. Luckup than me, but nevertheless, I do appreciate the comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, then, if we're not going to have you remove your objection, I'll go ahead and take a roll call on this motion.
Mr. Senator Chairman. Do you want me to vote on this motion, since this involves me? And actually, there was no response from the attorney for the state or Mr. Gardner's office. Responded to nothing during my testimony anyhow. So.
And I think since you identified your conflict, I'll still have you go ahead and vote. Senator Betty Davis?
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan?
Yes.
Senator Donnie Olson?
Yes.
Senator Lyman Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Bert Stedman, Senator Gary Stevens,
yes.
Senator Linda Menard, yes. Senator Joe Thomas,
yes.
Representative Alan Osterman,
yes.
Representative Mike Chenault,
yes.
Representative Bob Heron,
yes.
Representative Lindsay Holmes,
yes.
Representative Craig Johnson,
yes.
Representative Bill Stoltz,
no.
Representative Peggy Wilson,
yes.
Okay, it passes with one. Okay, at this time, we're going to give an opportunity for new business. I believe Representative Mike Chenault had something he would like to bring up or discuss. So thank you very much, Doug Gardner.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. And
the legal services.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. And I really don't like the idea of having to bring this up, but we have a legislative handbook that's passed out to all Alaskans.
Yes.
And it has in it everything from our phone numbers to our emails to our bios, little small bios, and it also has our office location and so on. Everything in here is supposed to be, I thought, legal and real. Then I get to the back page, and I don't want to make this us against you or them against us or the North against the South, but I get to the back of the book, and in the back of the book is the second verse of the Alaska State Flag Song. Now, the legislature has never passed the second verse to the Alaska State Flag Song. And while people in parts of the state like it, other people in other parts of the state don't like it. And I don't think it's appropriate that it's in this book. I don't ask that we reprint this book because of the cost. But before we put something in here, like the second verse of the Alaska Flag Song, I think that it has to, there was a bill in last year, I think it's still in the offer, to pass it. And I think that if we're going to do it right, then it needs to be done right. So I don't know who put it in there. I'm not placing blame on anyone. I just know it's in there, and I don't think that's the proper place for it, Madam Chairman. So with that, that's all I had today.
Okay, well noted. I'm sorry if that bypassed you, but that was discussed when that error was found, and it certainly wasn't intended, and we well vetted that. That was probably something that wouldn't be, and it's been brought up and discussed a couple of different committees.
Okay.
So,
Madam Chairman,
I don't mean to make it sound like you're Johnny come lately, but this is
Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, if I could, just as a comment.
Yes. Yes, sir.
I realize that I miss a meeting occasionally.
Okay.
And this may have been brought up.
Yes, it was.
And if it was, I apologize to the committee for holding the committee up. But I haven't heard anything about it, and I normally hear quite a bit around this building. So if it was brought up, I hadn't heard about it, and I apologize for wasting committee time.
There's a lot of, from my perspective, undue attention to this, but I did notice when we were brought into the Senate floor, when they sang, they did not sing the second verse this year, and they have done that the last two or three years. So from my perspective, I was disappointed in that, but we all come from different angles, and I don't want to rag this around because this isn't what this meeting is proposed, but I did give you a chance to air it, and I've aired it too, so well taken. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
While you opened up new business.
Yes, sir.
Something I missed, and I should have brought it up earlier, and that was reference to the minutes of the last meeting in November. And that the last page of that, there was a motion to make an offer on the ownership of the property in Anchorage at 909 West 9th Avenue.
Yes.
And it passed, 10-2.
Yes, that's correct.
And we've not had an update of whether you're still negotiating, whether the price is up or down. Or
still, we won't know for two more days, and that will be brought forward to the next meeting. So the final on that won't be. This is the 17th and the 19th. We will know a final.
Right. Event.
So that's that update. So, and I fully intend to bring everybody up to speed at that point.
Okay. One more.
Representative Johnson.
Just for information, can you tell me at what meeting second verse going in that book was discussed so I can go back and look at the minutes?
I don't know if it was a, and I'd have to defer right now to Pam and Kathy. Where was that pointed out? Pam, would you come forward, please? Because I want to go on record that it's, that was, at least it was brought to my attention, and I apologize if some months have gone by. Go ahead.
Thank you.
It was an issue.
I don't believe it was before Legislative Council. I believe we're talking about the Legislative Pocket Directory, and for many years it had just one verse in it, and when Ivasadi from my office sends the information to every legislator that so they can sign off and give us any updates. And then when we get the blue line from the publisher, the whole book is double-checked and sent to the presiding officers, and they sign off on it as to make sure just everything is A-OK in the book. I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, but maybe you didn't know. And I guess I'd have to ask why the second verse was put in. I don't know that.
I just want to take the hit because I don't have anything to do with it.
Madam Chairman, could I not only respond, but could I...
I just want to have her say two more sentences.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish up.
So that's what our process is. So they can see the whole outline, make sure we have all the committees right, the phone numbers, after committees on committees meets, and I really don't know when exactly or how the second verse got put in, but we did get, you know, a complaint from a constituent about it, and then I know I talked to you and talked to the Speaker's office and the Senate President's office, and so it was just communications between the offices. And in this new version, we will not be putting the second person, Mr. Speaker. And it is coming out. Do you know when we're getting it?
So the long and short of it was an honest mistake. I don't know how it got the second verse either. It's an ongoing issue, but did you... Yes.
Madam Chairman.
He did it.
When I started out the conversation, it wasn't to lay blame on anyone. So I don't want someone to think that I'm looking for somebody. Because I'm not looking for somebody, because if I was, I would find them. I would ask Wynn or whoever to bring me the piece of paper that I signed or somebody from my staff signed that approved this book. It's very possible that we did. But I can tell you, it's another example of the ferry system. When we have a legislative ferry that is supposed to go from Whittier to Juneau at the call, or not necessarily the beck and call, but it is set up for the use of the legislature. We get a ferry that comes in 2 days after the legislature starts, and the other is 10 days before the legislature starts. I get a piece of paper that says, when I ask the simple question of why it was done that way, I get one that says, well, leadership said that. Well, I can tell you, leadership out of my office did not tell you to put those that ferry out of Whittier on those dates. My staff give you a list of dates that would work for the legislature, not for the ferry, not for anyone else, but for the legislature. I take the brunt of every legislator in this building that we had a ferry that legislators felt that they couldn't go on because they had to go on the 5th of January, 2 weeks before session started, or they arrive here 2 days after. Now, maybe you talked to the Senate president, and he said that was okay. I don't know. But I can tell you, you did not talk to my office, so
you in here
I would ask that Wynn brings me the piece of paper, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I will agree for the next agenda that we will talk about this ship that leaves.
No. Madam Chairman, if I may, and I hate to do this,
yes.
It is not your job to decide when that ferry runs. I do not believe. I believe that it is the president and the speaker's proxy on when that ferry gets sent. And I may be wrong, but I believe it is. Because if it was up to you, she would be coming to you to get the ferry approval. And she doesn't come to you, Madam Chairman. She comes to me and the Senate president. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I still feel, since you feel so strongly about this, that we will try to agenda this and do it in a very reasonable way and try to get some answers for you.
Madam Chairman, I didn't think I was that strong until somebody fires me up. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Schultz.
I'm going to shut up for the rest of the day. I have a gallon of gas in this weenie room, but I'm just going to leave it under my desk. So.
Are there any further questions from the council? Hearing none, this